Comedian and author Brian Lemond, better known as Lemmy, was a recent visitor to the RNIB Talking Book Studios to record his autobiography. Surprisingly down-to-earth and very funny.
Surprisingly down-to-earth and very funny. My autobiography by me, Lemmy. I was born on the 20th October 1974. My ma was Jessie Lemond, my dad was Billy Lemond, and my brother was David Lemond, and I'm Brian Lemond. I grew up in a council estate on the south side of Glasgow called Carnwadrick. It was maybe a wee bit rough. Maybe. If there's one thing I don't want to do, it's make out that my childhood was rougher than it was. Carnwadrick was alright. It wasn't like growing up in a slum, like one of the old 40s of the Godbulls. If you want to see Carnwadrick, you can Google it. I grew up on Stana Lane Street. Have a look at that. No rough at all. And in terms of how it felt living there, it didn't feel as rough as some other places I'd heard of, like Govan or Easterhouse. These places where it sounded like everybody was slashing everybody.
A clip of Lemmy reading from his brand new book, surprisingly down to earth and very funny. Which, like your other book, Staff Wee Stories and That's Your Lot, you recorded at the RNIB Studios in Glasgow. But this one's a wee bit different.
Aye, well, this book is the first non-fiction book. It's the other two books were short stories, fiction. This is autobiography. I got asked by the same editor as the other books. They're fancy doing like a mental health book, so kind of yapped on about my own mental health sort of things before. And I said to him, "What, like a full 70,000 word book on just that?" He went, "I said, I don't think I could do that, but I could just talk about myself and like an autobiography, and then." And amongst that would be mental health stuff, so it's a wee bit of mental health stuff, but just generally a wee bit of kind of life story thing, which is a bit daft considering I'm only 44 and I'm not like a big shot or anything. Big shot, James McAvoy or Gerard Butler.
And you don't hold back at all in the book?
Not really. I mean, I'm kind of open about a lot of things, but even with the stuff in the book, I'm sure I could even open up more. But I like to... there's certain things I had to say to my girlfriend. Are you all right with me saying this? You know, I'm going to be talking about that sort of thing. Is that all right? What do you think? And she's fine with everything she wants to know about, like if I'm talking about, you know, whatever the stuff is. Because one thing I want to read with any kind of book about somebody's life is I just want to know the truth. I don't care if I like them or no or anything. I just want to hear the truth. I don't want to hear anything that's... that just sounds like what everybody else is saying. You know the way that everybody sort of hides who they are and you don't really get to know somebody. It takes ages, but you get some people that just tell you everything. And I want to be like that, and I've always been like that, and I like people like that, and you find out about them dead quickly with no hiding anything. So that's what hopefully the book's like.
Where does the name of the book come from?
It's this wee habit that I've got. It's a wee running joke that I've got on Twitter that if some celebrity dies... If any celebrity dies, usually you see a wee thing in the papers or the news about how the person was great. You know, I met him once at a thingamabob and he was a fantastic person, such a joy or something like that. And I don't know, all these wee anecdotes about famous dead people sort of merged together into my head into just one wee line. So if somebody was to die, I would say, I had the pleasure of meeting whoever it is at a charity do once. They were surprisingly down to earth and very funny. I just did that for anybody who's died that's kind of famous or semi-famous. And now and again it gets used in the news. Mm-hmm. You know, it's popped up in the, I don't know, like Sky News or like BBC. It's popped up in newspapers. And Peter Stringfellow died. It got read out in Sky News. I just did it as quickly as I can. And some people tweet me saying that that's how they find out somebody's died. Because, you know, that I'm just... I now get messages on WhatsApp for like a pal if he spots something before me, or I get tweeted right away. You didn't happen to meet thingamabob at a charity, do, did you? So I thought about what can I say about me for this autobiography, what would I call it? And it just popped in my head to use that. So and I asked people, I says, what do you think I should call it? Do you think I should call it this or that, or surprisingly down to earth and very funny? And everybody kind of voted for that, so... What's that?
Later on in the book, you describe the making of Lemmy's show, and as an example, you break down the various parts in making the DD in Joker sketch. Is that one of your favourites?
It's one of my favourites, because I like that, and I like even just the wee short things, like she's turned the wains against us, and because I know it sounds a bit, no arrogant or whatever, it sounds a bit kind of full of myself to say, oh, here's my favourite sketch of mine, but you've got an idea in your mind, you write it, and you film it, and you yourself obviously like it, or you wouldn't have made it, you wouldn't have wrote it, but the way you like said, she's turned the wains against us, turned out the fact is, it just happened to have been raining before it, the ground's all wet, so everything's all kind of a bit grey and all that, and there he is, and it was the one shot, one take, and it all worked out, that was the one that we used within the other take. I really like that, in a kind of luck sort of way, but the Joker one, because it had been in my head for ages, and it was a podcast episode to begin with that lasted about 20 minutes, to eventually make it into something you can watch, it's one of my favourites.
Half an hour later, I start seeing the signs. Joker news agents, Joker post office, Joker FC, Joker everything. They even had a barber that rhymed with Joker. Heard by Les Porter. What are the chances of that?
Now, I know from reading this book, you were worried about the first book, Daft Wee Stories, which we recorded the audiobook together a few years back. But the first time it was heard in public and in front of an audience was on the Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. How was that?
It was brilliant. I was really worried because it was the first live, just being on that podcast was the first live thing I'd done for almost 10 years. But I'd done the Fringe, and then at the Fringe I got, like just before doing that Fringe in 2008 is when I got told I was getting a pilot for the telly stuff. I thought, oh, good, because live stuff can be a wee bit nervy and stuff like that. So this is the first, that was the first time I'd done any kind of sort of live thing for ages. And I thought, right, I'm about to go on this book tour. I don't really know what a book tour is normally like. Reading out stories to people after and all read out. Would they be going like that? This is rubbish. So I read out this story, hoping it all went down well at the punchline, and it did. And I was like, right, good, because I did that a week before this book tour was about to start. So I thought, if this doesn't go down well, and this is one of the funny ones that I'm reading out, then I don't know what I'm going to do. So I read it out, wasn't too nervous. I got a big laugh, and I was like, right, magic. It was brilliant day, and it was a big relief. It was a cracking time doing that book tour on the first one.
You mentioned nerves there. I couldn't believe how nervous you were at the stand the first time you ever did stand up, which is in the autobiography.
I was terrified. Like I say in the book, I'd never been that scared at anything in my life, and I haven't been that scared at anything since. And I've been in the presence of people like kind of pulling knives out and things like that, and like shady sort of things when you don't know you're going to get battered or something. But that was terrifying, just going on a stage and at the stand in Glasgow in front of whatever it was, like 150 people or 200, I'm not sure. But terrifying. You know, just like horrible, feeling sick, feeling ill. No physically sick, but just that shaky, drained way, and just horrible. I can't even imagine it right now. I kind of remember back that clearly how bad it was, but it was terrifying. But once, what I say in the book is, once if you're ever thinking about if you could do something like that yourself, and you're thinking, no, I'm not that type of person, I thought I was like that as well. And to be that scared of something and to go and do it anyway, it's had a cracking effect on us, that it made fear a wee bit more irrelevant. And so even with the book tour, with that first book tour that went well, even when I was doing it for like 2 or 3 weeks, and it was going consistently good every night, I was still getting a bit nervous, and I thought to myself, well, look at this. This can't get any better, and yet you're still nervous. So in a way, that felt good, because I thought, don't even really try to fight it that much. Just accept that you're going to get this way. But feeling so scared and then doing it anyway has had that kind of whopping feeling to me, that it just made it that it doesn't matter now if you're scared, because you know that you can do it anyway, because I can't believe you got up and did that anyway. And it wasn't even that funny what I did. It was just a matter of getting on the stage when I really, really didn't want to do it.
Mm.
And it was all right. The sky doesn't fall. Everything's fine. So it's really good day, and I think anybody should give it a shot. I think you'll come off it. You'll come off and go, oh, I want to do it again. Or you might be thinking, oh, I wish I did it different. And you might be... you would never go, oh, can I do that sort of thing? Because you just did it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one word that keeps cropping up in the book is luck.
Aye.
Do you think you've been very lucky?
Aye, very, 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 very lucky. Really, really, really lucky. I mean, not my whole life or anything, but just how various wee crossroads here and there where it could have went really bad and then now it's got really good. So, aye, dead lucky. I mean, there might be some people who think you get to be on the telly or whatever it is by, like, hard work or something, or by being talented or something, but if you don't happen to be in the right place at the right time, you could be in a job that maybe you don't like, and you don't think you're very good at something, you think you're not got much talent, and all it takes is for a bit of luck for you to end up in the right place at the right time, and you find out that you're actually good at a certain thing and all that, that you thought you were rubbish before, and you're actually quite good at it. And that's what sort of happened to me. Before the telly stuff and everything, I was not very good at a lot of things, having a lot of difficulties with certain things, but just by a bit of luck, by getting into making websites and then making my own website and then happening to put videos on it that were like sketches, and then making a DVD of these sketches, and then that ending up at the Comedy Unit. One thing led to another, and then getting into stand-up, which I was never into, never wanted any stand-up. One thing led to another, and here I am.
You mentioned in the book your work with people like Graham Linehan and Charlie Brooker, and you almost had a shot at writing an episode of Black Mirror.
I had a chance to write for Black Mirror before it was made, you know, before I made it. I met up with Charlie Brooker, like my agent said, if Charlie Brooker likes your stuff, would you be interested in writing for this new thing he's got, which turned out to be Black Mirror? And I came up with an idea for it, which is rubbish. I mean, now that I know what Black Mirror is, it's sort of technology and a dystopian future, and, you know, this is kind of like, you can almost see things heading this way if you think about it. It's that kind of thing. I didn't know even the tone, you know, it can be mm-hmm. a kind of serious with a bit of comedy. I thought it was a bit of a kind of laugh. So I created this, well, I came up with the idea that it's this, like, set in the future, and it's like crime's got out of control, so they've came out with these draconian measures where, like, everybody, you get executed for every single crime there is, except if you've got this this Rambo knife. There's this one Rambo knife going about, and whoever's got it can do what they want with that. That's the only thing that's permitted. It's like a safety valve, like a pressure sort of valve to let out some steam for society. Here, rubbish idea. But that's all I had. And he got back to us and said, it's not really my cup of tea, but, you know, give you some more ideas if you've got them, but I don't. That's the best one I've got.
I don't like to do it, but talking of other rejections, there was one from the BBC that involved you travelling all day.
I tried my hand at writing sitcoms, like, after Lemmy Show, or just before I finished Lemmy Show, and I thought, I'll get into that, you know, so if I can just sort of pick and choose what work I decide to get into. And one of the sitcoms, it was for the BBC, and they asked us, the folk down south said, do you want to come down and tell you about our decision? And I said to my girlfriend, you know, I don't think I'll get it. She says, of course you're going to get it, but you think they know you're in Glasgow. They're not going to ask you to come down, like, 4.5 hours down the train and 4.5 hours back just to say no. And that's exactly what they did. It was 4.5 hours down. The knockback took, like, 5 or 10 minutes, if that.
Mm-hmm.
And then 4.5 hours back. And that doesn't include the underground, the walk into the BBC, the waiting about for the train. You're probably talking 10, maybe even 11 hours. And this is in a day and age when you've got phones and text messages and emails and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, actually having to go down, like, it's like 1700s or something.
And talking of travelling, earlier you mentioned how good the past book tours were. Are you looking forward to touring this book, and do you think because of the subject matter it might be a bit of a different night?
I'm looking forward to it, but I'm a wee bit worried about things like, right, this isn't these aren't the stories with big punchlines. Some of them have got sort of kind of punchlines in a way, but it's you're telling stories of your life, and it's not like you can tweak it to get a kind of a punchline at the end, unless you want to lie, and I'm telling the truth. So I can't go, all right, I'll tweak the ending to make it this big laugh. I mean, you can sort of tweak a true story to make it a bit meta punchline or climax at the end. So I'm a wee bit worried, well, wait a minute, this is a different sort of thing. This is, you know, what stories am I going to do? Mm. I've not got like, oh, that's a funny one, and that's a funny one, and that's a funny one. Even if something's funny, it's not really funny in a kind of punchline at the end way. So I'm just thinking about what I'm going to do. I'll probably have to say at the beginning, just to warn you all, this isn't going to be a good night. You know, you're not going to enjoy this. So anyway, let's get cracking.
So what message do you want people to take away after they've read the book, especially on the mental health side?
But the mental health stuff, I try to be conscious. I know saying to anybody, this is what you should do. You get a lot of that on Twitter, but online, where somebody's saying, you should try this, this will work. There's a wee bit where I talk about meditating and you should try it, but then I also say, I've not tried it for ages. Mm. I used to do it all the time, and you just sort of slip and you don't care. But I try not to go like that. Right, this worked for me, so you should do it. I just try to give you an example, one of many examples you can get with all sorts of people, that here's what happened to me, or here is what happens to me, or what tends to happen, and what I do about it, or what I did about it, and things that people advise me before that I didn't really believe, and it turns out it did work. And that's it, just to kind of, with that, just to sort of give myself as an example, or a bit of mental health kind of breakdown, or mental health problems, and one way I get around things, or things like that. So that's it, really, just a kind of wee example.
And what's next?
One thing I'm really into right now is, and it's going to sound daft, but streaming games. I'm on this website, Twitch. It's kind of like YouTube, but mostly for games. But I do a lot of like chatting away and making up stories, and I'm just getting into that. And the thing is, it's like, almost like a kind of fan-funded sort of thing. Mm-hmm. People who like your stuff can sort of like chuck you a bit of money and that kind of thing. And if you get enough of that, you know, there's people who've made careers that are just playing games. And if you get enough of that, you could actually just be sitting on a seat for the rest of your days, talking a lot of nonsense to a webcam and getting a career at it. So hopefully that's what I'm really, really interested in right now.
And it is fully accessible for someone with sight loss, because it's essentially just you and a microphone telling more wee stories. Now, if someone wants to hear them and find out more, you're on Twitter.
It's Daft Limmy, DAFTLIMMY. And Twitch, it's twitch.tv/BrianLimond. As a bit of a loner type that was scared of lassies, it goes without saying that I was into computers. My first computer was a Commodore VIC-20. Before that, we had the Atari 2600, then the Spectrum. But the Atari was merely a console, and the Spectrum was considered to be my brother's, whereas I thought of the VIC-20 as mine. After that, I was never without a computer. The VIC-20 was replaced by the Commodore Plus 4, which was replaced by the Commodore 64C, then the Atari ST. After that came the consoles and the PC. It must have cost my mom and dad a fortune, but that's all I was into. And it's what I've always been into, more than anything, computers. And I later became a computer programmer of sorts. I remember my first computer program. The first program that wasn't just me printing my name all across the screen. It was done on the VIC-20 when I was just 8 or 9, and it was adapted for a tutorial in a book that I had. The tutorial taught you how to make a program that presented the user with a series of options that they could select for, with each option given a different response. When you ran the tutorial, it asked the user what they would like to eat from a choice of 3 items. The user would press 1, 2 or 3, and the computer would respond with something like, "Very well, sir," or "I'm afraid there is no more soup." It gave me a wee buzz seeing it work, but I had an idea of how to adapt it.
Another clip of Lemmy reading from his autobiography, surprisingly down to earth and very funny. It will be available in late February, and his other books, Daft Wee Stories and That's Your Lot, are available commercially in print and audio now.